Welcome back to the Hudson Valley Disc Golf Podcast. My name's Pat Keenan, and I'm not allowed to say anything about the gun William Byrne has pointed at my head to make this podcast. We have two guests this week. First, we'll hear from Frank Castellani, a new player who developed a quick love for the sport. Aiding me with the interview is Brian Heller, a man who has made his mission to keep everyone in the disc golf community informed about events both local and national. I hope to harness those powers for good and use them to keep the listener up to date on local disc golf news. That's enough for me. Let's hear a little more about Frank and Brian.
Basically, Frank, we're here to get your origin story, your disc golf origin story. So tell us a little bit about yourself and then tell us how you got involved into disc golf.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So my name is Frank. I'm 51 years old.
How do you pronounce your last name?
Castellazzi.
Castellazzi. Okay, that may be the last time you hear me pronounce it correctly ever again. Okay, continue. I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's been butchered for my entire life so many times that I just kind of roll with it. It's kind of funny at this point. My origins in disc golf, I saw baskets in parks and stuff like that years ago and always was intrigued by the concept, but never took the time to look into it or anything. So this past May, I was in a really dark place because of the depression from my divorce. And I knew there was a course in Beacon, but I wasn't sure where. So I just went driving one day and I found the course and I walked around and nobody was there. And I was like, okay, now I need to find out more. And then I found the Facebook page for Beacon Glades and asked to join and got accepted in there. And my very first post on the page was, "Hi, total noob, never played the game. Is there anything I need to know before I come out? What kind of equipment do I need?" And that was it. And within the first 5 minutes of posting that, I had an invitation from three different gentlemen to come out that weekend and play a round of disc golf.
Nice.
So I went to the course that weekend and I played my very first round with three of the guys at Beacon Glades, Brent, Mike, Dave, and I fell in love with the sport like right away.
Just to clarify, you got Brent Baisley, I'm assuming, right?
Brent Baisley, Mike Bruni.
Mike, there's 47 of them.
Yeah, it was Bruni.
Okay, Mike Bruni.
And Dave Kay.
And Dave Kay, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, continue.
No problem. And so the funniest thing about my very first round is I lost my keys on the course. And at like the 13th hole, had to give up and search for the keys. And then Brent gave me a ride home to get my spare keys just so I could get my truck back home.
Wow.
And on the way back to my apartment, he asked me what I thought. And I was like smiling from ear to ear and wasn't fazed by the fact that I lost my keys on the course. I was just in love with the sport from Jump Street. And the most beautiful thing about the whole day was I played this round with three guys I had never met before. And when I left the course that day, I had five discs, a bunch of phone numbers, and countless amounts of advice from people that were hanging out at different tee boxes around the course, and realized I had found not only a sport that I was already going to be obsessed with, but a group of people that I could just hang out with and have no pressure, no issues. It was just accepting.
Did you ever get your keys?
Yeah, actually, somebody found them the next day and sent me a text message because it was already on the Beacon Glades Facebook page. And I went to the guy's house and he gave me my keys back. And it was like I had lost them for a total of 24 hours.
Wow. I'm sorry, going back real quick. You said you were given a bunch of discs. Did you bring discs? What was your first experience getting your first disc?
So I was given discs that day to play with. I didn't have any. I didn't know anything. Like, as far as I knew, people still played this game with like the frisbees that I threw at the beach with my kids.
Gotcha.
I had no concept of specialized discs. I didn't know the difference between a putter and a distance driver. I didn't understand anything about weights and plastics. It was a whole completely new world. And I was intrigued by pretty much every aspect of it.
I think you found a good crew to give you a good introduction. Brian, did you have a question? I think I might have stepped on you a second ago.
Nope. All good here.
Okay. Do you have any questions?
No. I mean, I met Frank a little bit ago and him and I have a similar thing. Like I've been playing longer than he has, but when I got divorced, I found myself with a lot of time on my hands and kind of like that was like my little therapy. So I totally get what he's saying with that.
It's funny that you said therapy, Brian, because that's what I've been calling it since I started. I refer to it whenever I talk about the sport to friends of mine that have no concept what I'm talking about is disc therapy.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, like, I mean, even to this day, if like stuff is just like if the brain is busy, just yep. go out and throw. Like exactly. if you have time.
Yep. Even if I just go to like practice tee shots or practice putting, there's just something about like as soon as I get onto the property, it's at other courses too, because I've played a few now at this point, but especially at Beacon Glades, it's like as soon as I pass through those two metal posts, I'm already calm in my head. It's an amazing feeling, to be honest. It's the place where I go when I'm stressed or things are bothering me or if I'm missing my kids or just, you know, anything in life really. Because once you start throwing discs, you don't really concentrate or think about any other stuff.
So, Frank, have you played in any leagues since you started playing?
I did my first league that just ended recently. I played in the Beacon Glades Antisocial Friday League, which was probably at this point like the best experience for improving my game. I got a lot out of it. I played with mostly the same cast of characters every Friday afternoon, and it was very helpful to have that structure and get more in place with the actual rules of the sport, because it was a PDGA league. And mm-hmm. so I learned a lot in that aspect, but also just from the constant play, I got a lot out of it. It helped me improve on different aspects of my game that it helped me to concentrate on specific portions and just get in a different mindset of rather than just step up and throw and see what happens.
Nice. Did you get any kind of rating based on your rounds?
I did, but I don't really know what it is. I was paying attention at first. And then at the end of it, I was just kind of like things had kind of gotten a little bit crazy. So I didn't really see what my rating was at the end. But being a brand new player in it, I never really expected it to be like I didn't expect to be like knocking lights out.
Well, speaking of knocking lights out, somebody here just got a ratings update. Brian, didn't you just hit 900 or were you at 900 before?
I was at 900 before. I was at 903. Mm-hmm. Two updates ago, then I went down to 899. Mm-hmm. So now I'm back to 90. I'm up over that to 907.
907.
907. The big leagues now.
Wow! Congratulations.
Oh, that's solid. Yeah, I'm always a big fan of the 900 club. I think that's a deal.
Yeah, it is.
Especially you've gotten it. You got under it, but then you got it back. You know what I mean, like right. that. So
well, that's the whole thing. It's like it's one of those things to like. End the year above 900, and I was looking to see what I have coming up. I'm doing the FDR One Town Turkey Trot this weekend, and I was like, oh, I just got to get above my rating, and then I look, I'm like, oh wait, it's not sanctioned. I'm like, yes.
Just have fun.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it's definitely fun. I've been playing down there a little bit more now because they have been running some mm-hmm. sanctioned stuff, so I'm getting some rounds under my belt for that. So I've been down there quite a bit. And again, it's like the Beacon crew. It's like, it's a good group of guys that you run into down there. Of course, Kimmelman's down there, but
he's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
Yeah.
So, Frank, how'd you do in that league? I forgot to ask.
Actually, like you would know better than I would on that part. I mean, I had a lot of fun. I handicapped stayed pretty consistent. It started to come down at the end. And according to the rumors, there was a points thing involved and somehow I won it.
What? Yes, you did.
There you go.
Thank you.
I put out a bunch of numbers, but a few of them about yours that I just thought were interesting. You didn't win any week.
Nope.
But
that's perfect.
Thanks for reminding me.
Well, I can actually tell you, as far as you're talking about consistency, if we did a buck a week, it was a 8-week league, you would have gotten paid out $5.
Woohoo!
You were 10th in pay rank, 83 points. You beat second place by 9. let's see, worst handicap, 16.33.
Yep.
Best handicap, 14.33.
Okay.
And your average, yeah. And I think your current, if you had one right now, would be, I can take out all these would-bes. Yeah. Your very first week, you were at 15.
Yep.
Now you would be at 14.67.
All right.
So that, talk about consistency. You never got up more than 16 or down more than 14.
Yep.
I would say that's a problem I have when I play leagues like that, is that like I'm just consistent with like a stroke or two. So like I gain nothing, I lose nothing.
Well, one thing I found with this league was each week the winner just had a really good week. You know what I mean? Like one of those rounds where it was like three or four strokes better than the norm.
Yeah. Right.
So it kind of worked in that way. Like most weeks it was about three. There was the first week I won it by like five, but you're also talking about people who had only three scores going in.
Right.
So it was until you got to five, really week two with five scores, it wasn't really that's when it really kicked in as far as the actual average, because it dropped your best and your worst and kept the three middle.
Yeah, I would say, because I think the couple I played over at Oasis, like my handicap was like around two. So like even like a lights out round, I'd still, you know, wouldn't get much better.
I know I'm fascinating folks with numbers, but I just thought it was, yeah, here's the last thing I wanted to point out. Where are we at, Frank? Yeah, fifth place, 20th place, 15th, 5th, 12th, 13th, and 8th. So one really bad week,
yep.
Probably got erased. And you had enough fives. You had three of your best weeks. So that tells me that you had three really good weeks.
Yeah.
And get rid of that 20, you had some pretty good weeks.
I had some good weeks. I had a lot of fun with it. And one of the best things I got out of it was I learned how to commit to the run.
Oh, you were telling Steve Rush told you that, right?
Yeah. Steve Rush came up to me one day when we were doing our – I was playing with Steve Rush out of – how many weeks was it? Eight?
Yeah.
I played with Rush probably six or seven of the 8 weeks of the league, mm-hmm. and I was getting a lot out of it. But there one week he came up to me after a failed putt from distance, and he's like, I want you to try something. And he showed me how to Anheuser my putt. And I tried it from the distance and I nailed it. And he was like, see, just when you're a distance, I want you to concentrate on that. This is your release. And after that, I just kind of, and it rolled over into tag rounds and just fun rounds and everything else. And it really helped my game and it helped my confidence a whole lot to realize that I don't have to try and lay up, that what's the worst that's going to happen. I'm going to miss the putt and going to just shoot again. I wasn't really worried about being in contention of anything. I just was enjoying playing with the people. And I found that, especially with the groups I was playing with, I played better when I was playing with better players because I was trying to step my game up to a higher level.
Nice. What month did you start playing?
I started playing about midway through May.
So you've already been in your first league and you've had tournaments or just a tournament?
Just the one with the Blaze this year, which was stepped back from what it normally is.
How was your first tournament experience, limited though it was?
As limited as it was a great day. It was a lot of fun. A lot of that I want to say has to do with the vibe at the Glades. Like the people that were running the event, you had Cookie, you had Chris, you had Brent. You know, they put a lot of effort and a lot of work into it. And knowing that everything that goes on at the Glades is all done by volunteer, it was a great day. It was so much fun. It wasn't a high pressure event, and I was just there to kind of get the experience and enjoy it. But seeing all the different players that were there, and it, like I said, it's the vibe of the Glades. Like as soon as it started, like I was like, there's no pressure. This is just another round with my friend. So it was really cool. I want to do more tournaments. I'm planning on next year doing more. I've already started the concept in my head, so I'm practicing a lot more, and I'm looking at courses that are within travel distance of me to see what's going to be going on. And because of my situation being divorced and having my kids on the alternate weekends, I have to make sure everything fits into my schedule.
Yeah.
But
the farther out you go, the chance it could flip-flop for some reason or
yeah,
any of those.
But I'm looking forward to doing more and finding more that are definitely going to be more pressure-filled, more like, I guess.
Like PDGA sanctioned or something?
Yeah, because I'm actually going to be getting my membership card number and all that and becoming the real deal. And, you know, I got obsessed with this sport right away. I know I've said it a few times already, but that's the truth of it is, like, I've said it at the course. I've said it to friends of mine when I talk about it. The sport pretty much saved me, and I get obsessed with things very easily. And now that I'm at this point, I'm like, oh, well, you know, I can join the PDGA and I can go to sanctioned events and, you know, I can keep playing at my rec level and see how much better I can get. And like, oh, I know my age, I know my limitations and all, but it's like, I want to see how good I can get at this.
Nice. Well, we've got more to talk about, and we got to talk about why Brian's here. But before we get to that, I thought we would play a round of trivia because there is a story here. Why I have you two particularly.
It's the senior league.
I think it might have been the first time I met Frank, or one of the first times I met Frank. He was telling me about one of the episodes he was listening to and how, I don't know, he thought that some of the guys could have done better in, I believe it was a movie category.
I believe it was either movie or TV.
Yes, movie or TV.
And my big mouth got me in a whole lot of trouble again.
Because he's telling me about it. And I said, well, why don't you ask him? Because Brian was sitting right there. Now, what I was hoping happened was this big heated rivalry. So I instead made it up myself. So I have some trivia for you guys. The first round, it's a movie round.
Okay.
Let me get that and I'll introduce it. Our category tonight is a movie category. It's called a movie title mashup.
Oh, boy.
I'll give you an example. And I think from this example, you'll figure out how the category works. Buzz in saying it's not worth anything. It's just for fun. A 1994 film where Simba climbs to the top of the Empire State Building with Fay Wray in his arms.
Okay. Lion King Kong.
Yes. So each movie will be like that. Each answer will be like that. Frank, since you're the first timer, do you want odds or evens?
I'm going to go odd because I'm an odd person.
All right. That means you get the odd questions and Brian gets the even questions. See how that works? All right. Frank, question one. Police Detective Callahan enrolls at Hogwarts in search of a magical rock.
Dirty Harry Potter? Oh, my God. The Philosopher's Stone. No. Is that it?
Final answer?
I got the Dirty Harry Potter part right. Dirty Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
All right. I think I would have taken Philosopher's Stone. I believe that was the title overseas.
Yes. Yeah. That was the title of the book over there. Yeah.
That's too much knowledge in my head.
So that's 1 point. Brian, question two. Luke Wilson feels his world coming undone. He moves into a new place, which happens to be near a college campus, and tries to get his life back together by posing as a substitute music teacher at an elite private elementary school.
Old School of Rock.
Correct. These are more fun than hard, but I just thought they were fun.
I don't know. I'll say the dirty Harry one he got before me. I'm like, who the hell was Callahan? I'm trying to think. I couldn't pull up before he got it.
All right. Question three. Back to Frank. A shy student trying to reach his family in Ohio and a gun-toting tough guy trying to find the last Twinkie are sucked into a space-time vortex. They make friends with a primate named Chaka, their only ally in a world full of dinosaurs, the undead, and other fantastic creatures.
Zombie Land of the Lost.
Correct.
Oh.
Nice.
I was dying as soon as you said Chaka.
Question four. This is for Brian. Ben Stiller tries desperately to win the love of Cameron Diaz, the British nanny of the Banks children.
Something About Mary Poppins.
Correct.
Oh,
nice one.
These are tougher than I thought they were going to be. I'm not going to lie.
Your first one threw me for a bit.
Old School of Rock?
Yeah. I was blanking on the School of Rock portion of it.
Some of these are long. Next couple, for example. Back to Frank for question five. When Eleanor Dashwood's father dies, her family's finances are crippled. The Dashwoods move to a cottage in Devonshire. Eleanor's sister, Marianne, is torn between the handsome John Willoughby and the older Colonel Brandon. Meanwhile, Eleanor's romantic hopes with Edward Ferrars are hindered due to his prior engagement. Meanwhile, again, both Eleanor and Marianne are haunted by a dark secret. They see dead people.
All right. So that's got to be, I know the last part is definitely Sixth Sense. So Sense and Sensibility, Sixth Sense.
Is that your final answer?
I think so.
Brian, you want to try it?
I didn't have it, but I'm just going to rearrange his and go Sixth Sense of Sensibility.
Yeah, Sixth Sense and Sensibility.
There you go.
You just have words.
Yeah, what do we do on that?
I don't care.
Yeah.
I didn't have it. I was like, Henry VI of Sense? I didn't know it.
See, because that one I flip-flopped the...
Yep.
Yep. All right. So do we want to get back to some trivia?
Sure.
I think we were leading 10-8.
What's that?
I think I was leading 10-8.
10-8 for five questions? All right. So we did get through Sixth Sense and Sensibility. I remember one of the things that you guys were talking about it.
Yep. Yeah.
And my trickeration by slipping it back and forth.
You tricky person, you.
Yes. So question 6. When single executive Kate Holbrook decides the time is right to finally have a baby, she hires a working class woman to act as her surrogate mother. However, Kate's careful planning goes out the window when the woman comes to believe that her offspring is not of this world. A comic battle of wills breaks out between the pair as they prepare for the blessed event, but the diabolical truth is revealed only after she gives birth.
I'm so glad I don't have this one.
I'm trying to focus on something of it. Like I have
to make me to read it one more time.
Yeah, I hate doing that to you, but yeah.
No, it's fine. Question 6. When single executive Kate Holbrook, played by Tina Fey, decides the time is right to finally have a baby, she hires a working class woman, played by Mia Farrow, to act as her surrogate mother. However, Kate's careful planning goes out the window when the woman comes to believe that her offspring is not of this world. A comic battle of wills breaks out between the pair as they prepare for the blessed event, but the diabolical truth is revealed only after she gives birth.
I'm trying to think of the full title of the movie. I don't know if it's the full. Give me. All right, I'm going to go with Rosemary's Baby Mama.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah,
you are correct.
I couldn't remember. It was like, look what happens to Rosemary's Baby. I couldn't figure out. Like I'm like, oh. It wasn't that long of a title.
Yeah.
No, there's whatever happened to something or other. There was
Baby Jane.
Maybe. Yeah, that might have been.
Maybe that's where like again mixing my.
Well, those old movies have weird titles sometimes.
They do.
Well done.
All right, so that ties it up. Question 7. Charles Bronson, this is for Frank. Question 7. Charles Bronson and 6 other gunslingers save a town and then all get married.
Oh, 7 brides for the Magnificent 7?
You want to try that again?
Well, it's Magnificent 7 and 7 brides for 7 brothers, I would think.
Okay. Uh-huh. So put those together.
And don't say 7 twice.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just said it. The Magnificent 7 brides for 7 brothers.
There it is. Oh, my goodness.
That's the tricky part. Yeah.
So much harder when you actually have to do it and you're not yelling at your radio.
I was going to say, there will be somebody yelling at their radio right now at you.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And I deserve it. And if it's Andrew, go for it. I earned it.
All right, question 8, Brian. Based on the popular video game, Ash Williams and Alice are the leaders of a commando team who must break into the Hive, a vast underground genetics laboratory operated by the powerful Umbrella Corporation. There they find an old book, the Necronomicon, whose text awakens the dead with a virus that is when it's read out loud. The team has just 3 hours to shut down the lab's supercomputer and close the facility before the virus threatens to overrun the Earth.
I got
this is Brian, right? Evens.
I say I got one of them. I don't know the. I'm trying to think of another Resident Evil Dead.
There it is.
Yeah. That was a complete guess. Like I had Evil Dead. I'm like I don't know of anything like Dead something. Oh,
well done.
That one hurt. I dug deep for that.
All right, Frank. Question 9. Finishing off the front 9. An angel is sent from heaven to help a desperately frustrated businessman who survived a disaster at sea and is hurtled into an epic journey of adventure and discovery with a fearsome Bengal tiger.
Oh, my God. Oh, that hurts.
You better get it. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I know you have it already. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. It's so easy to yell at your radio. I know the movie, and I can't think of the name. Oh. The stupid CGI tiger. Oh, it was so bad. And the book was so good. Oh God, I'm so blanking on this. I'm just gonna blank on this. I can't.
Nothing but Brian.
Go for it, Brian.
It's a Wonderful Life of Pi.
There it is. It's a Wonderful Life of Pi. Oh, I couldn't even get It's a Wonderful Life out of that.
All right. Question 10. Back 9 goes to Brian. Imprisoned on the other side of the universe, the mighty Thor finds himself in a deadly gladiatorial contest that pits him against the Hulk, his former ally and fellow Avenger. With stars in their eyes, the young lovers chase their dreams. But a misunderstanding involving rock god Stacey Jacks, played by Tom Cruise, threatens to tear them apart.
I'm not a whatever Marvel person.
Ooh. No guess?
No, I'm gonna. No. Well, it's Rock of Ages, and I'm thinking like Age of Ultron or whatever that one was, but I don't know. It's not Age and Ages. That's throwing me. That's the only thing that's in my head, because I don't know unless it's Thor. So,
Rock of Age of Ultron?
Yeah, but it's Ages, though. Rock of Ages. Mm. What about Thor? I don't know the title. Thor Ragnarok of Ages?
So close. So close.
Like,
so close.
Judges?
Ragnarok? Fraggle Rock?
I'll give him the assist.
Yeah, Ragnarok. You got it. Yep. Thor Ragnarok.
There it is. Yep. Thor Ragnarok of Ages.
Yeah.
All right. Frank, question 11. Han Solo meets up with Lando Calrissian while time traveling with Marty McFly.
Oh my God.
Oh, come on.
Oh.
Mr. Yell at Radio.
I know. The thing is, it's a Han Solo thing. And I could go into a whole thing on Han Solo. I could nerd out on why Han Solo is the worst character for ages. I'm trying to remember which Star Wars movie. That's got to be the second one. Empire Strikes Back. Empire Strikes Back to the Future?
There you go.
Like, it took me forever to put that together. I'm like, okay, Back to the Future. Like, I should be easy with this. But you hit me with Han Solo, and I hate that character.
All right, Brian. Brash space adventurer Peter Quill is forced into an uneasy truce when he and four stars of a 1970s sci-fi show are beamed aboard an alien spacecraft.
Go one more time.
Sure. Brash space adventurer Peter Quill is forced into an uneasy truce when he and four stars of a 1970s sci-fi show are beamed aboard an alien spacecraft.
70. Yeah, nah, I ain't got it.
Nothing?
Nah, nothing.
All right, Frank, to get back in the game for the tie. Do you need me to repeat it?
I got the first part of it. Peter, the Galaxy Quest reference.
Brash space adventurer Peter Quill is forced into an uneasy truce when he and four stars of a 1970s sci-fi show are beamed aboard an alien spacecraft.
I didn't have the one that you got.
Ah, so together.
Yeah, we might have it. It's a tag team event now. So it's definitely Galaxy Quest. Trying to think of a movie that goes with Quest other than Quest for Fire.
Or one that goes with Galaxy.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that one too.
or that one.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I'll say it again. Yeah, it's easy to yell at your radio, Frank.
Do you have a guess?
I can't get past Galaxy Quest.
I can't. I can't get past Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh,
Guardians of the Galaxy Quest.
Guardians of the Galaxy Quest. Okay, that's fun.
All right,
I missed
Frank. This one's for you. This is your regular question.
All right.
If you thought that one was confusing,
that was
Wily band manager Mr. White. Helps a small-town band achieve big-time success when they release a Beatles-style pop song in 1964. Meanwhile, tensions rise in an all-black neighborhood because the local pizzeria's Wall of Fame exhibits only Italian actors.
That thing you do the right thing.
That was Frank.
That was for Frank.
Oh! We'll give that.
Oh,
and then Frank gets the next one.
Oh, I stepped on that one.
That's okay. I was right there when you started talking, and I was like, okay, never mind. I'll let him go.
He might like that.
Oh,
did I say Brian?
No, you said Frank.
Oh, okay. okay. This one, I think Frank will like anyway. You ready?
Yep.
Question 14. Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Aquaman, and Cyborg team up with Alan Quartermain, Tom Sawyer, Captain Nemo, the Invisible Man, Dr. Jekyll, Justice and Mr. Hyde
of extraordinary
in the hopes
gentlemen.
Of making, in the hopes of making one good movie. What was that?
Justice League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
There you go.
And it still wouldn't be a good movie.
I would say, good thing you got that one, because I wouldn't have pulled that one, I don't think.
That's deep nerdism.
Yeah. Wow.
All right. We're going to go back. So now there's...
Should go to Frank again now.
Yeah, because...
Me and my big mouth.
No, I just for mathematical purposes, yeah, I think. All right. Question 15, Frank. This drama focuses on the powerful Italian-American family of Don Vito Corleone,
okay,
the proud parent of Annie. When she returns from studying abroad and announces that she's engaged, hilarity ensues.
Oh, God, it's a Godfather reference. Go with it. Annie comes back from abroad engaged? What in the world is that? Godfather of the Bride?
You are correct.
Ooh, way to work it out.
See? See, I told you Pat does them well.
Yeah. It took me a little while to get to Father of the Bride, and then I remembered that was her character's name in it, so I was like, oh, wait a minute. See, that's right. The problem, though. I have too much useless information in my brain.
All right, Brian. Question 16. An immortal winter sprite falls in love with a human girl after rescuing her and then does a series of interviews with a former president.
Interview with a former president. Go one more time.
Certainly. An immortal winter sprite falls in love with a human girl after rescuing her and then does a series of interviews with a former president.
I got the second one.
It's more than I've got.
I know it's not it, but since we're heading into the winter season, I'm going to say Jack Frost v. Nixon.
Or what? You are correct.
Nice.
What?
Jack Frost was a movie with Michael Keaton.
Oh, my God. I wasn't even thinking that. I'll be honest with you.
Nice.
I wasn't even thinking that.
I think, Mike, there was definitely a Jack Frost.
Yeah, he was a musician that dies in an accident, and then he becomes a snowman to hang out with his kid.
The winter sprite thing, I was thinking like a little fairy or something like that. I'm like, I don't know any movie like that.
Yep.
Holy All right. Crap. Question 17, Frank. The story of a middleweight boxer as he rises through the ranks to earn his first shot at the middleweight crown. Along the way, he receives guidance from a poetry-loving groupie named Annie Savoy and a veteran catcher named Crash Davis.
Oh, Bull Durham. Oh, why am I blanking on the...
I told you it was harder than it looked.
You're right. God, I'm going to run out of time.
Yeah, you get about 10.
Oh, I can see the movie in my head.
Final answer?
I don't know the first part.
Brian, would you like to help?
Raging Bull Durham?
There it is.
You are correct.
I couldn't get Raging. Oh, good job. Not. Nice steal.
And see, that's the trick, though. He might not have known Bull Durham.
Oh, everybody knows that movie.
All right. Question 18. This is for Brian. While homesick in bed, a young boy's grandfather reads him a story about a mad scientist who builds his mother a mate.
Frankenstein's Bride. Ah, oh, hold on. Oh my God. I'm like blanking on it. Hold on. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm like totally blanking.
Go ahead. Blank. Go ahead.
Oh my God. Oh, no, no. Okay. Princess Bride of Frankenstein.
You are correct.
Oh, there it is. God.
I'm like,
that was better than Frankenstein's Princess Belle or whatever.
I mean, it's like when I was thinking it was Bride something, I'm like, oh, Frankenstein's Bride. Wait, no, that's not the movie. Like, that's what totally threw me off is that I put it in the wrong spot.
All right. So Frank, here, this doesn't count. I just have an extra one.
Okay.
Jim Carrey voices an elephant that heads to Toontown to solve a murder with Bob Hoskins in what animated classic?
Okay. Read that again.
Certainly. Jim Carrey voices an elephant that heads to Toontown to solve a murder with Bob Hoskins in what animated classic?
So it's Horton Hears a Who and Who. Okay. Horton, I'm trying to word it properly. Mm-hmm. Horton Hears a Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Correct.
There it is.
See? Only took him 19 questions. He figured it out.
I bow to everyone that has ever done this show and had to deal with the trivia because I take it back. Everybody that's listening and ever listens, please understand. Don't yell at your radio anymore.
Final, I had a Brian at 10, Frank at 7.
Thanks. Good job.
Hey, that's good, though. That means 17. There was one question you guys didn't answer. What was that? Guardians of the Galaxy Quest.
Guardians of the Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, we each had half.
Good job. That was a lot of fun, and I'm grateful that I didn't have to do the disc portion of the trivia.
Well,
So round
two. I think, yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to save that for next time.
Yeah.
Nice. So what we got, what is it? A 10-7 lead. We'll do a round two and a round, next time. Thank you guys.
Yeah, awesome. I'm good. I'm open anytime. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for even asking me. I take back all my trash talk. I really do.
That one was just so long. We lost Pat.
Yeah. Yeah, Sense and Sensibility. I did not know that.
I was grasping at straws at that one because I was like, wait a minute. Well, it's not Little Women. And then all of a sudden, one of the names finally clicked.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I haven't even thought about that one. And like, I never even saw the movie. I read that, but that was it.
Yeah, I was gonna say like Sixth Sense I had, which is why I was kind of thinking like Henry the Sixth.
Yep.
Sixth. You know, I'm like, because I didn't know the story he was telling. So I was like, I don't know. And then I didn't even think about the back end of, you know, Sense and the, you know, continuing on that.
That was the only way to get there was work it from Sixth Sense.
Well, yeah, that's the thing with the, well, you know, he has it where you can like work your way through it if you know a piece of it.
Yep.
Which is what I like about it. Cause like I said, like old school. Okay. I got that one. You know, Luke Wilson's got a ton of movies. Okay. I got the one he's talking about. Now what goes with ends with old or begins with school.
Yep.
You kind of go through it.
That was a good one. That was a real good one.
So how you been, Frank? I haven't seen you like in a long time. I feel like,
yeah, it's been a minute, hasn't it? I've been good. I've been real good. The like I said, the league was a lot of fun. I got a lot out of it. I've had some really good rounds lately, and then the other day I had a complete and utter collapse where every single tree at the Glades decided it wanted to take my discs.
Yeah, it happens, right? You go from that thing of like, oh, I just missed my line.
Yep.
And then you get angry and then you just like laugh at it. You're like, I can't, like if there's a tree, I'm going to hit it.
Yeah, I just make jokes about it at this point and start like making up parody songs involving trees and discs.
Yep. Oh, 100%.
I had set a goal when I first started playing that was like kind of ridiculous, but I did it anyway because it's kind of how I am. With all my hobbies and all my interests, I set goals. And then when I reach it, I set a new one.
Right.
And when I first started, my original goal was to T1 drive to the flagpole.
Okay.
And like if I could hit, and my goal was to try and hit that by end of summer because I had a lot of people giving me some really good pointers. And like Gary added 30, 40 feet to my tee shot easy because he's just always at the course and he's always willing to give you a lesson. And I'm pretty sure he's forgotten more about disc golf than most people will ever know.
Right.
So he was in my ear the one day and helping me a lot. And I didn't reach it by the end of summer, but just before the Blaze, I had started to reach it like maybe one out of every six tee shots. I was getting flagpole or like right at it, like same height. And so that was really good. And then the other day I went out for the first tag round with the new tags and caught up to my group because I was on an important phone call and they're like, yeah, we'll meet you on hole two. And I actually parred hole one for the first time ever.
Nice. I'd say for me, that hole for the longest time, that was just like, it's going to be a four. It's going to be a four. Like, I just couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong. I mean, that slow, gradual uphill just like gobbles up your distance.
It eats distance like it's going out of style. And it's so deceiving. And now when I look at it, the hill just looks like it's way bigger than it really is.
Right.
Because now I'm analyzing it and now I'm holding my disc better. I've got more of a tighter power grip going on. So I'm getting more of that whip when I release, especially when I release properly. Mm-hmm. And so now it's becoming a point of, okay, which disc do I want to throw? Do I want to go, like, there's no wind today. I'm going to go with a lighter disc and really get some whip on this one and see what happens.
Right.
And the other day when it was really funny because Kimmelman had put up that he wanted to do a tag round. And we had like seven people immediately respond that, yeah, okay, we'll meet at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Great. Sounds good. So I'm working nights, getting to the Glades, which is like 10 minutes down the road from me, isn't hard, but I was like, screw it. I'm not going to sleep a lot today. I'm going to the Glades for the first tag round.
Nice.
And I got there and my group was getting ready to start hole two, and they were like, just catch up to us. And so I had my putt from, I would say, a good 40 feet, maybe 35 feet. I was just above the barbecue pit, basket. Yep. And I threw the putt, and it was all chain, and it stayed in. And it was the funniest thing, because Kimmelman's group was just coming up onto the basket of four. My group was just teeing off on two. And all I could think of yelling was, no! And they all thought I missed. And they're like, what? And I'm like, I just parred this hole. And they're like, and you chose to yell no.
You're like, no, you don't understand.
I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like I wanted to yell more, but like, that's all that could come out. Like, I've never parred this hole. It was just, and right. That's the thing about the sport. Like, you could have a bunch of bad shots. You could have a pretty cruddy round, but there's going to be that one that you go, oh man, that was awesome. I can't wait to do that again.
Yeah. And it's funny. It's that thing of like, once something clicks, whether it's the throw, whether it's the, you know, release, whatever, like whenever like it clicks and you hit it for that first time, you're like, oh
yeah,
like what that disc does. Yeah. I can throw that far.
Yeah. Yeah. I've started changing like my idea of what discs I want to use where, which is funny. Cause like I said, I just started in May, but like now I'm looking at my discs and going, no, I need to use this one here. Cause I know how this one's going to tail off at the end.
Right.
Or, you know, this one, I can get out that, I can get this one further out to the right and have it come back. And now I'm starting to see lines in the woods, and it's hysterical because it's just like, oh, okay. Why didn't I think of trying to go that way before?
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, again, it's like that worst thing is like when things start clicking and you're like, it's like all the videos, you just like see these things you've never seen before. You're like, oh, I just threw straight that way.
Yep.
Every time. And now you're like, oh, there is something out to the right or out to the left and this and that. Yeah.
Like, the best example I have it is, hole eight at the Glades.
So seven's the tank hole that goes straight down.
Yep. Seven. Okay. Yeah, seven's the everybody's favorite downhill run.
Okay.
And then eight, the basket is really just kind of to the right of the tee pad, down and over the rock wall and down the hill a bit there. And I've seen everybody go way out to the right. And
right.
I never saw it. And okay. There's also the fact that I couldn't bend my disc to make that shot very well. I was always nailing trees. Like, there's those two trees right off of the pad.
Right.
That I was just constantly nailing. So then I can't remember who I was playing with the one day, but I was like, all right, I'm going to concentrate on putting this thing further out towards the right. So I want to aim like I'm going at the cabin that's down there and let the disc do what it wants to do. And I was using my Maverick of all my discs there and just let it go. And it was like one of the things Gary had always been saying to me, you'll hear that whip sound as the disc is passing you before you release it, when you know you've really gotten everything you can on it.
Right.
And I heard it. And when I released it, I felt it. And like, I actually did like the follow through the right way. And my body was in the right position and my hip had gone through right. And I was like, ooh. And the only thing I didn't do was try and follow my disc.
Okay.
And I let it go. And I don't know who it was. It might've been Griffin. It might've been Gary, whoever. They were like, that's a great shot, man. You're going to be real happy with that. And so we go down to see where our discs are and take our second shot. And I was just below the pin, like 8 feet from the basket there.
Wow.
And
nice.
I had never gotten that distance on that drive. I had never been on that side of the basket before. And it was like just so cool. And I like, the only thing I can say is like, when I was putting my marker down to get ready for my putt, I had to step back from it and breathe and try and calm myself down for what was essentially just a pickup and toss. It should have been the easiest putt in the world. But I was just like so high from seeing the disc landed. And then it just set me up for like the rest of the round. I was like, wait a minute, if I can do that there, then over here, if I tried doing this, and it's just opening, it opened up more doors and more ideas in my head. And then it started making me see like two to three different lines where I never saw them before.
Right. Yeah. No, I'd say the one thing I'm working on right now, I'm trying to throw mids where I used to throw fairways, throw putters where I used to throw them. Like, I'm trying to like see what I can do if I disc down.
Yep.
And it's that thing of like, because like I finally committed to like any like holes under two, like 200 and under, like I throw a putter on.
Nice.
And it's that thing of like, you know, like, I don't know, like if, you know, if my putter goes to my mids go to 40, then to whatever, like, I don't know that stuff. Like, sure. I don't pay enough attention and I don't just go out to a field and throw. But like, just like today I was out over at the Oasis and there's one hole I always throw like a fairway, you know, big hyzer around. I'm like, what if I threw my mid like lower and just let it go? And it ends up in the same spot. I'm just like, huh? Okay. Okay. You know, you just like think, you're like, all right, so I can throw a, you know, a mid with a good throw is the same as a fairway with a good throw, just different. Like, okay, you know, so again, like just learning that type of stuff of what I can and can't do with a disc is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Oasis is such a beautiful course to begin with.
Oh yeah.
So like anytime, like, I've only played there once, and like that's one of those courses where I'd like to go and play it. And now that I like have a little bit more control, I see that course completely differently.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple holes that give me a headache over there, but like, again, it's, you know, when the town park got packed during everything in spring, summer, like I was at Oasis and Beacon all the time.
Sure. Sure.
So, and like, even now, like I don't go over to the town park that often anymore just because like, it's going to be busy and, you know, I like this, you know, so like, you know, Oasis is like my second home now. It's like, you know, I used to always go to the town park first.
Sure.
I hardly go there now.
Oasis is the home of, and like, take it with a grain of salt, I've only played four different courses at this point, but Oasis is the home of my favorite hole so far that I've ever played.
Okay.
The, I believe it's 16 with the pond.
15.
15. I love that hole.
Since I want to say summer, maybe midsummer till like now, the amount of discs they've pulled out of there.
Oh, it's got to be insane.
Hundreds.
Yep.
Hundreds. I mean, there's what times where like somebody would go in again, you know, people go in and, you know, and just kind of like feel around with their feet. You know, we have a couple different little apparatuses that kind of we can throw out and drag back. But like one weekend they'd clear out like 70 some discs, and then the weekend somebody else would go out, pull out like another 50. And it's insane how many are in there. Again, between Glow, if you ever play the long tee there, you can kind of see where like why there's like high speed drivers in there.
Oh yeah.
But like it's amazing how many are in there. And again, I have one in there, a buddy of mine's got one in there, like they're like, again, with the like 250 that they've pulled out, like those still aren't out yet.
That's hysterical.
Oh yeah.
That's funny. The day I went to Oasis, I ended up playing Oasis and the town. I played Steel. Okay. The same day. And I went to Oasis first.
Okay.
And had never been there, had heard of it, didn't know anything else about it, and got there and was like, you know, I was like lost. But
yeah.
You know, the people that were there were like, oh, yeah, yep, there you go. You're good. Have some fun. And off I went. And when I got to 15, I was looking at it and I'm like, wow, I just want to play this safe.
And that's the thing. It's like you look, you're like, again, it's like just over 200 feet, I think. It's not a far throw, but it's that pond just gets in your head.
Exactly. And the only thing that saved me from like really freaking out is that the weeds on the side of the pond were like really high.
Right. Yeah.
So I was like, well, if I keep my disc low, chances of me going swimming aren't all that great. And there was nobody behind me. So I was like, I'm just going to throw everything in my bag.
Right.
Just to see what I do. And so I played my first shot with my Meteor and just threw it flat and straight, and it tailed off and it was like right at the turn. And I was like, okay, great. That's cool. And I had no idea where the basket was in relation to the pond at that point.
Oh, like how close it is, you mean?
Yeah. So I walked to my disc just to see it, left my bag at the tee, and I'm like, oh, I have to be careful here because it's wide open. I'm like, okay, no problem. So I went back to the tee. I'm like, that's the one I'm going to play anyway, but let's just throw everything else.
Right.
And I had a couple of –
honestly, throwing long is better than throwing short.
Yeah. So I had a couple of really nice shots. So then I decided, all right, you're here and you're looking at this pond and it's not that big, so – like you're gutless if you don't try and go over it.
nah, I don't. I don't have faith in myself.
So
I do. I'm throwing something big and heavy that's going.
Yeah. So I was like, whatever. What's the worst that can happen? The disc goes swimming, and if I can find it, great. And if I can't, my number's on it. Eventually, I'll get a phone call.
Right.
So I threw my I think I threw my witness at that one.
Okay.
And I let it go, and it was one of those times, because it was still really early in the game for me, that like everything just kind of lined up in my pull, and the disc took off just right, and it went out and over and came back, and then I lost sight of it, but I'm like, that's got to be close. That's not in the water. I know it's not in the water. And when I walked over, I was like 4 feet from the pin.
Nice.
And I was just like, this is why I love this game. And then I'm looking around and I'm like, and this is why I hate this game, because there's nobody here to see that shot.
I'll say about 2 weeks ago, I got an ace on 17 with no one around.
Oh, that's amazing.
Like I was having a phenomenal round, like, and I throw it and it made a turn at the tree where it's supposed to turn. I'm like, oh, go in. And it just splash in, arms go up. I look around for anybody working, anybody, like, I'm like, fuck, there's no one here. I'm like, I don't care. That shit went in on my first throw. I'm happy.
That's funny. The closest I've had to an ace was 10 at the Glades.
Okay.
I was doing a fun round with Bike Rack, mm-hmm. and Griffin, and I can't remember who, there was a fourth there. And I was still throwing a mid-range at that hole. I don't do it anymore. Now I'm exclusively using my putter there, which is like a huge jump up in my game and made me feel a whole lot better. But I was using a mid there, and as soon as I released it, I was like tracking it, and it was heading towards the big tree, and then it started to cut in, and I was like, ooh, that's got a chance. And then I tripped in the tee pad.
No.
And I heard nothing but chain. And I got all kind of like delighted. And then as soon as I looked up, I saw it fall to the ground outside of the basket. And
yeah.
I had that total platoon moment where I was down on the ground on my knees. And I just kind of raised my hands up and I was like, no. And Griffin was all like, dude, you had it. Oh, my God, it was an ace. And Bike Rack, being Bike Rack, just looked at me and goes, it fell out, dude. It's no big deal.
That's perfect.
And I was like, thanks for bringing me back to earth, dude.
Yeah, I would say that happened to me once. I was up there playing dubs and I was Cali. So I threw my first shot on the island behind the trees. Okay, good. And they're like, no, throw. It's like, this is ace run. Take your second shot now. I'm like, all right, you know. So I throw it. It hits the chains and, you know, it doesn't stick. So I go down there, and that one actually went further than my first one. So I'm like, all right, I'll take my second. I'll take my first shot for my putt. And it was like just behind the tree enough where I couldn't really stretch out enough. So I missed the putt. And like I ended up taking a three from like – and I was like 6 feet away. I'm like, you know, if I had another go at that putt, I probably would have made it. I was so mad because, I mean, I didn't get the ace, so it didn't stick. So it was like a wasted shot. I so wish I had two putts instead of two drives.
Yep.
Pat's talking crap about me.
Finish your fake ace story. Ouch.
Thanks to Frank and Brian for joining me. We'll be hearing more from them soon. Anyway, that's all we have for this week. Not sure what next week will bring, but I do have a bunch of tape from a road trip this summer with JFat and James that is must see. I've got some other ideas as well to get us through this long winter. So until next time, sweet up Hudson Valley.